We're going to talk about GPU accelerator program and try to focus that for OpenMP4. I am a lot of things, but primarily I'm delivering this on behalf of a large number of people that are research scientists and language designers that has been trying to figure out how to program GPUs for the last 4 or 5 years. So as a result, a lot of this is taken from many different sources, incredibly talented groups of people. But nevertheless, I want to make sure that you guys know that any errors that remain are their fault, not mine. All the good stuff are mine. No, I'm just kidding. As usual, I've taken some of the slides from the OpenMP groups, from the research groups, and so anything that's left over that is really bad or stupid mistakes is just basically I made a bad copy and paste error. Okay. As usual, there's a whole bunch of trademarks because what I am going to talk about is going to be about a lot of different companies. And because OpenMP is about 26 companies, it has to make sure that it clears those things. So what is OpenMP about? And so how does it fit with C++? More than anything, OpenMP is a common vendor specification across these implementation companies. Okay? The rest are user groups that's attached to OpenMP. And as you can see, basically all the major companies are implementing compilers in this respect. Why are they doing that is a good question. And why is it that we do what we do? I think this is probably one of our biggest strengths, is the fact that whatever we do, we spread it across three languages, the three major general purpose languages, C, C++, and Fortran. Okay, and I'll explain why that is important in our domain. Okay, the other thing that we're trying to do here is that we're trying to deliver probably one of the first high-level accelerator languages out there, as well as one of the first high-level SIMD languages out there. Up till now, you've been having to program, AVX, whatever it is, SSE, at a fairly low-level company-specific way. Whatever Intel or AMD or IBM says, you do with PowerPC, which is AutoVec. It's important, I think, in our world to be able to raise the abstraction. This is a consistent theme about what C++ does for you, is that it raises the abstraction. And this, too, is important. Raising the abstraction so you can program SIMD vectors without having to reprogram it when you switch to SSE, for instance. Raising it so that accelerator so that you don't have to change the code when you switch from NVIDIA or to something to an Intel mic or a Xeon Phi or something like that. Okay, these are all important things that moves the industry forward, so you don't have to redo things. Okay, we support multiple devices, just like AMP does. Yep. Oh, okay. No problem. Sorry about that. All right. So it's design, but it's a broad group of accelerators, and including coprocessors and digital signal processors, devices from Xeon 5, NVIDIA, Mic, as well as devices on DSPs and FPGA. So this is where OpenMP starts to becoming a little bit different than what some of the other specifications will do for you. So how does this fit with other GPU accelerator efforts? Okay, I've been asked to talk a little bit about this, and I kind of got that from Aid's talk this morning and from the talk yesterday about how does it fit in? There seems to be a lot of questions. There's no question in my mind how it fits in. We have a parallelism TS from C++ standard. It looks like this. This is actually code that I just basically took right out of the TS this morning. And it's showing you that this, What it's showing you is, and some of this stuff was contributed by NVIDIA, by NVIDIA research. And what it's going to deliver for us in C++ 17, if it gets fully ratified, is the ability to do potentially parallel sort. You've always had sort in STL, but it's sequential. You know it's sequential. Wouldn't it be great if it could be vectorized or parallelized? It is possible. NVIDIA has Thrust, which does that. AMD has what's called Bolt, which essentially does that. They have parallelized STL. There's a GCC implementation that uses OpenMP to parallelize STL. There are multiple experiences to do this. Now we have to. Well, now we just standardize it. And the way we do it is fairly simple. You can see that the trick here is that this first parameter keyword, vec, par, we have sequential for sequential, which is the original, which is what current STL does, vec, and vec par. It's pretty simple. Just looking at this code, you begin to understand that it's just a library implementation. Okay, it's just a library design. We talked about this morning at AIDS discussion. Why is it that that might not be enough? It might be. The reason it's not quite enough is that for compiler optimizations, this still doesn't specify how memory is moved across from hosts to accelerators. Much of that is buried inside this library call. Now it is possible, we're not there yet, if we can somehow make the array description, which is another C++ standard proposal in flight, make it so that it can match, somehow work with the iterator that's in here. It doesn't yet, it still works with indexes. And that's, by the way, is a fundamental problem or issue with all of these GPU the accelerated programming model, whether it's C++M, the OpenMP model that I'm going to talk about, they all still primarily use indexes because that's how you naturally program GPUs. You think about a fairly linear sequential index, okay, whether it's one or two dimensions. Let's go on and take a look at a couple of more things. I'll just flash through a few things too. C++M, you've got some great example slides already. This shows you one possible way of doing things. I hope I got it right. I'm sure you will jump down my throat if I didn't. But fundamentally, you see that the attractiveness here is this is well married to C++. Okay? It really is, it's tightly integrated with it. It uses lambdas, it uses all templates if you actually have to. Okay. If you actually have to use this code in some other form, other languages, C or Fortran, it's not going to work very well. But that's not what it was designed for. And then just to get you further on, this is what CUDA really looks like. I've omitted a whole bunch of code. It's primarily a library call, again, to do things like allocate the array, to copy image data to the array, set the texture parameter, bind the array to the texture, run the kernel, and there's like a whole bunch of code here. I just don't have enough library calls to show that. But what is interesting in this slide is every GPU programming model essentially has to do all those things. The difference lies in whether they hide most of this stuff inside some instructions, pragma, or some sort of array view, or something like that, where it's all essentially done for you. It's to different degrees. That's all it is. If you understand this, every GPU programming language that's going to come up now, today, or in the past, or in the future, is going to become pretty obvious to you. So what is it like? What is the real difference? I live in a lot of different worlds, as you can see from my many titles. I've been in ISO C++ for 10, 15 years. I've been OpenMP CEO for the last 3 years. I've designed company-specific languages. I am primarily a language designer now, after 15 years of experience. How do I see them? How do I see the differences? Well, it's kind of obvious to me. Something like ISO is kind of like the first picture there, a nuclear aircraft carrier battle group. It's got a lot of attendance. Different nations has to be attached. Nations has to be voted on these things. And it is slow. It's a lot faster than it used to be before, thanks to Herb's guidance. It used to take 10, 11 years to get a new standard. Now we're trying it for 5 years. In our world, 5 years may not be fast enough. Okay? The other way is you do it through a consortium. OpenMP is one of them. There are other ones, like Kronos, where OpenCL lives. They are a consortium. A bunch of companies basically get together and says, I think, let's do this. We think this is a good idea. Okay? They can turn around code design, language design a lot faster, okay? It's generally not as good as what ISO delivers. I've seen the kind of specification. I'm writing them too for OpenMP, and even I would admit that it's not as solid, you know, not every dot, every T is totally crossed, but it's like a cruiser. It can really change course fast. It can deliver things in 2 years, okay? You have a company-specific language. I'm not naming any particular ones, but there are plenty of them that you can point to, good ones and bad ones. They serve a company-specific need, okay? And of course, they can change on a dime if they have to, because it's what the company wants. No one else will implement it because it's that company's specific language, okay? You have to do various things to open it up. And I can see that with C++M, it's beginning to migrate through this into a higher, to the next level because they've opened it up. However, the thing with a company language, the good part is, like I said, it can change fast. It can change, it serves whatever the company says. A good example, and I'm not sure I really want to bash anyone, I'm not, Objective-C, for instance. That's a very company-specific language, okay? And they really don't care about opening up to anyone because that's what they want it to be, right? And like I said, they can change, and as I said, they can change on a dime, okay? All right. Flash player is attempting to access the network. No. Always says no when things like that happen. Now it's interrupted my slides. All right, let me see if I can change it again. Sorry about that. All right. Because now I can't move. I know what I have to do. I have to come over here. Escape this, and then restart it again. All right. Thank you. All right. I'm going to skip past a bunch of other things. So what now? We have these various standards in flight, and they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay. Nearly every C++ feature that we have ever made is to a certain extent, made for beauty, elegance, and code for the developers. And I don't bash C++ because I do love C++. I've loved it for 20 years, ever since I started, and I still love it. That's why I devote so much time to it. Many of the C++ 11 features are under my name. And if you look at this, this is beautiful and elegant code. Lambdas is one of the poster child, some of the most beautiful code that I have ever seen. The question is, that comes up to my mind when I think about this, is does your language allow you to access all the gigaflops of your machine? And like any rhetorical question that's given in a presentation, the answer is always no, okay? If people ask any kind of rhetorical question in a presentation like I have, no, it's not, okay? Does your language give you access to all the big gigaflops of your machine? Well, for most people, if you think about it, they always have to drop out to some other language to get access to it. They might have to drop out to OpenCL, CUDA, DirectX, C++ AMP, okay, Assembler, to get at the CPU. And other people are looking at C++ potentially like, is it just a cool driver? Because if I actually have to drop out of it to get at this thing, there's something wrong with it, okay? I would like to pose an interesting question. Is there any language that allows you to access all the gigaflops of your machine? No. Yeah, Assembler. I forgot about that one. Yeah, I guess that could do it. It'd be different assemblies, because you have a different assembly for the host and different for the GPU, different for the transactional memory, different for the vector SIMD. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't have assemblies. Let me take you back to 1998, okay, when C++98 was released. Intel Pentium 2 had 0.45 gigaflops. There's no SIMD, no SSE. That came a year later. There's no GPU. Funny how that sort of that watermark kind of worked out exactly like that, right? C++ came out, and then it worked great for single thread, and after that, GPU, SSE, everything came out, okay? To 2011, when C++ 11 was introduced, I bought myself an Intel Core i7, had 80 gigaflops. My God, 80 gigaflops. I bought myself an NVIDIA 660 or 670, I don't even know what it is now. 140 gigaflops, four cores. I'm skipping ahead of myself. It has an AVX unit for vector SIMD calculations. It had 140 gigaflops. And then I bought myself one of these NVIDIA cool things, and it gave me 2,500 gigaflops. When you look at this and compare it to what the core, the scalar CPU gives you, it absolutely dwarfs it. but what language can I program it in? Okay. In 1998, 40.45 gigaflop, one core, it probably looked like that sliver. A single thread C++ 98 computation easily dominate this picture. In 2011, a typical machine had about 2,500 gigaflops of GPU, plus 140 gigaflops of SIMD vector units, plus another 80 gigaflops in four cores. To program that, I can use any one of these combinations in order to make that happen. And it's still, for the most part, true. Now I can add transactional memory to that because that's my because that's my other research interest. So I can't help resisting that. OpenMP is trying to service all these particular different aspects to some extent. Okay. In fact, so they're trying to service the GPU part, the vectorization aspect, and the CPU part. And I just put in a research proposal for transactional memory support in OpenMP, just as I'm chairing the C++ transactional memory group. Okay. I'm going to skip past most of this because most of this is just talking about what the structure of the corporation is. It's not that interesting. It's grown a lot. Jim Cowney from Intel wrote this, designed this tremendous graphics that illustrates the growth starting from 1997. Pablo says it's probably one of the oldest parallel language out there. And yes, it pretty much is. Maybe MPI and all that, you can sort of count that too. It's interesting that this is one of the oldest. Think about how often parallel languages gets invented. I can guarantee you in research labs, universities, a new one probably gets invented once every week or so. Fortunately, they also die every week. The same number die at the same rate because that university graduate student moves on, forget about that language. Persistence of parallel languages is not that easy. It means that it really has stuck around for a long, long time. Okay. The most recent addition is this transition to support accelerators, coprocessors, devices, SIMD parallelism. Okay. And this is what I want to talk about. I'm going to skip past these. I'm well known for skipping through slides because when I look at it, I don't think the audience is interested. I don't think, you know, we need to talk too much about that. We have to change our mandate though. When I took over as CEO, I said, our old mandate is no longer true because it used to be just about programming in a shared memory environment. Okay. Now with GPU accelerators, that's totally broken because now you have totally separate memory from the GPU itself. Standardized, directive-based, multi-language, high-level parallelism. Okay. Let's keep going. Like I said, Pablo did a great job on the tutorial, and I'm just going to show you quickly how this works. It's a pragma language, everyone knows that. People have said that that's really ugly. Of course it's ugly, because we're trying to service three languages, and we're trying to put the same pragmas in Fortran, they're called comments. Remember Fortran, that language called F, whose name I shall not mention again? They use comments and they put them in exactly the same place. The whole design was that if you use C++ Fortran, you can put these things in exactly the same place, and they mean the same thing, okay? If I want to print a parallel hello world, this is what I would do. Just to mire you in the complexity of parallel program, which some of you guys might know already, if you just do this, it's going to start up as many threads as there are cores, and every one of those threads is going to go through every step of that program. And therefore, you have no idea as to which order these things are going to come out in. They could be hello world, world hello, whatever. This is even assuming that your printf library is synchronized. You may or may not know, the standard doesn't actually require the letters themselves to come out in the right order. It could even be in some scrambled order, okay? We won't get into that. We're trying to fix that in C++ 11, 14 actually with a synchronized IO stream library. Skip past that. There are ways to fix this in OpenMP. You can create a task that can do it. You can create an order task with input and output to get it all right. That's really all I just want to get you guys to appreciate. Like I said, Pablo actually did a great job of doing my job for me for showing what it is. All right. So, like I said, why does OpenMP use pragmas? Well, it's an intentional design. because it wants to support three general purpose languages the same way for parallel programming and maintain the same style for C++, C, and Fortran. And why is that? Why has it lived for 15 years? And it's because, and this is the reason. At national labs across the United States, whether research across the world, and there are really only four or five, really. You guys know about NOAA, you guys know about ECMWF from England, which did a much better job of predicting the storm track of that storm that hit New York than NOAA, and you know. Nuclear simulations, they all use this stuff, and they all have a mixture of Fortran, C, C++ code. In fact, most of the kernel computation is still written in Fortran. They are actually having problem finding Fortran programmers now. Most of them have retired or passed away. And they're rapidly trying their damnedest to convert their Fortran code into C or C++ code. But they're afraid because all that code has worked for years. You have weather simulations that is tracking hurricanes across the Atlantic that is locked onto this stuff. You change that stuff to C++ overnight, half of that stuff could stop working. They can't take that risk. Okay? Just like check, you know, when you talk about legacy code, just like bank check clearing operations, they're still done in old IBM mainframe 390s machines. They will not switch that stuff to, imagine all your check clearing fails one day. That's just impossible. All right, let's continue on.
I would say you'd get even lucky if they allow you to
link those. Yes, it'd be lucky if you could actually even get into. So all of this stuff still has to work with all of that stuff. Thank you very much for making my point. All right. But now we're in a brave new world. And what is this brave new world? Okay. So this slide is just showing that there are compilers shipping now with accelerator support. Intel 13.1 has supported this brand of accelerator for quite some time. Oracle Sun and GCC has all of this stuff, what I'm going to talk to you about. And I've been working on Clang support, which I'll talk a little bit about. So you saw this slide about how we need a language that allows you to access all of your GPUs. All right, I can't get through this without showing the names of people who's helped this design. You can see that they come from all over, every company, from Cray, the chairs are from Cray and Texas Instrument. Key contributors, and so for some of my slides, are from Intel, RWTH, Aachen University, CAPS. You can see that NVIDIA is involved in here, NASA is involved here, a lot of national labs are involved in here, as well as some of these other hardware players. So how do you program a GPU? What does an airplane have to do with that? How do you program a GPU? I heard some of it this morning, but some of it might have escaped you guys, okay? Abe kind of talked a little bit about that, but it went by so fast, I was so happy. I smiled when you said it, but how many people here have actually programmed GPUs? Okay, good. I'm going to put an analogy in. You may like it or hate it. Okay. When you fly across the Atlantic, okay. Now they have these major airlines that can take like 500 people across the Atlantic. Okay. They got much bigger wingspans. They can't actually fit into a regular hangar. They have to put them in, usually maybe a special slot or something like that that's bigger than normal, okay? You have to be loaded into these things. 500 of you guys have to be loaded. That takes time. The benefit is that these planes are much faster. They can get you across the Atlantic in about, well, maybe six hours. To the airline, that's just money in the pocket. 500 people, 6 hours, fantastic, one flight. The only thing is, it's not actually any faster than a regular airline because by the time you get loaded specially into a special terminal so they can get onto the plane and at the other end unloaded to a special, that could add another 1 hour on top of all that. Well, that's just like what GPU programming is like. You need a special place to load all your passengers. Then you put it on this giant plane with much fatter wide bodies that can put 6, 8, 10 people across. And then when you get to the other end, you got to unload all those people into a special terminal, take it off, and put it off into a special terminal and off into your regular terminal. It isn't actually faster, but to the airlines, it's great because instead of flying 300 people across 8 hours, you got 500 people across 6 hours. There's one more little caveat. If one of you guys on that plane gets up to go to the bathroom, you know what I'm going to say, right? all of you guys have to get up and go to the bathroom at the same time. That's how GPUs work. No kidding. If you, one of you guys wants to eat a meal, all of you guys have to eat it at the same time. Okay? You're probably now thinking, this airline really sucks, actually. But it also gives you an idea what kind of programming work this is ideal for. It is not good for programming work where you everyone do their own things, have different accesses here and there, Monte Carlo simulation. You know, it's coming out all over the place. I want to go eat. I want to go to the bathroom. It's only good for certain types of model where you do a certain uniform kind of thing across a small memory region of memory all at the same time, and then you move on to another region of memory all at the same time. When I heard this, this really made it clear to me what are the challenges of programming a GPU. So why is GPU important now? Is it just a flash in the pan? Could be. I don't think so, but because data parallelism programming will remain with us for a long, long time. I come from the high end, like I said. A lot of people here might come from the consumer end, okay, programming games and things like that. At the high end, we have been instructed by the United States government to reach exascale computing, exaflop computing, by 2018. Yes, 2018. I will walk through that. These screen grabs are awful, aren't they? They just don't. I will walk through that. So this is called the race to exascale computing. Most research labs are now trying to build computers that can get us to exascale. Exascale is 10 to the 18 flops, just in case you don't know. All right? This graph is from top 500 computer website, where they chart the progress of the biggest supercomputers in the world and how fast are they. All right, so how do you read this? Across this is the flops, but it's in gigaflops. So that number up there, even though it's only got nine zeros, it's nine on top of nine other zeros, which you can't see. So that's the goal we're trying to aim for by 2018. We're right here. This line that floats up and down is the top fastest computer every year, that single one. The blue line is the cumulative gigaflops of all the other fastest computers. As you can see, it's not that much faster. The top one blows everybody away by so much faster. This one is the lowest 500 computer. It's not that far away either, but you can see a very consistent trend, can't you? Okay. Are we going to reach that top dot by 2018 about here? It looks good, doesn't it? It's not bad. This line is crazy, right? It's like that line that tells you how many transistors is in, right? It's racing up there. What is slowing this down right now potentially is energy. How hot these things get and how much energy that they take up. They cannot get up there and take like a whole city's power. That's just not practical. They want to get up there and take the same amount of power and maybe even less than what we have now. To do that, you actually, it's not just the change in hardware, it's a change in the silicon, it's a change in the programming model. The programming model has to be less intensive on locks, such that, because locks uses up energy. Okay, every time you fail that lock, it is just costly. Okay, that's why they're exploring things like GPU programming, hardware transactional memory, to get us up there so that you don't have to, so that you can reach that speed without the enormous energy costs. So am I okay with this one here? Cool. All right. These are the top 500 contenders right now. Okay. The top one is this Chinese computer called Xi'an He. I can't pronounce it because I can't actually speak Chinese. It means Milky Way or something like that. It is almost halfway to exaflop. It uses the Intel Xeon Phi OpenMP model, okay, to program Xeon Phi GPUs. The second one here is at Oak Ridge National Lab. Cray is working on it. It's called the Titan. Okay, it is about a third of the way there. It uses NVIDIA Tesla, hundreds of thousands of them, okay, and AMD I think it's AMD. I'll have to check that, but I don't remember all these ones. This is what IBM has. It doesn't use any GPUs, and it is way behind. I don't mind saying that. Okay. Now you see why GPUs are so important. It's not just to you and your games and the games and the graphics. It's this. It's trying to get us to exaflop computing by 2018. People are betting huge money on this Chinese Xeon, again, I can't pronounce it, and the Titan computer. It is now called the Jaguar. The next iteration of this computer is the Jaguar. Okay. And what programming model are they using? That's OpenMP. This is a hybrid of OpenMP called OpenACC and CUDA. Okay. That's why it's so important to create a programming model that is efficient and works on these things, because that is going to come down to all your laptops and all the little servers that we have now running in our companies. So what is OpenMP's model's aim? It's not just graphics. We have to service every industry, because we have to service accelerators, digital signal processors, GPUs, GPGPUs, APUs. That means kitchen appliances, drones that are flying over your heads, or just this one, by the way, is from FedEx, and it's going to deliver packages to your house. I've never actually figured out what needs that kind of urgent delivery to be worth a drone flying and dropping it down. The minute you order it, you have to go out your door, and the drone will come down and drop it right down there. What is it that requires? Is it pizza? Okay, I can buy that. Pizza is good, but is it worth the $20 cost addition on top of the pizza? That's my question on these drone things. I don't know. Yeah, Billy, you're from one of these kinds. You know, you might know have more into this stuff. Yeah, I'm still figuring this out. Auto, telecoms, medicals, these all, by the way, have accelerators in them. You may be looking at these going, well, where are the accelerators? It's in there, trust me. They're not NVIDIA accelerators or Intel accelerators, because those are too big. There's no way you're going to put a 2-pound accelerator, a Tesla graphic in here. It's got to be 10 ounces, stripped of virtually all memory and just the accelerator. That's all they care about. All the military drones all have accelerators in them. They all have to be programmed with some kind of a programming model, okay? And that's where we're trying to live in, okay? So let's get to the model. How does it work? Yeah, I'm right on time, 30 minutes. I'm starting finally on the model. So the OpenMP model assumes that a computational node has a host device connected with one or multiple accelerators as target devices. Like a lot of other models, it uses a host-centric model in which the host device offloads code regions and data to the accelerators for the actual execution itself. We use the target construct, okay? Other models use different ones. And at some point, I'm preparing a paper that will compare all the different models and how they do all, because they do all, actually, they, no matter what you call the words or the syntax, they all have to fundamentally do the same thing, okay? You also have to devise a memory model as to how memory is trafficked between the CPU and multiple GPUs, okay? So we have to design various new words that has to go with this, okay? Here in this case, a device is essentially what the GPU is. It could be a coprocessor, a DSP, I don't know what, a military drone's coproc or whatever it is. It can be any logical execution engine defined by an implementation. And essentially has threads that behave almost the same as the threads from the host, okay? Initially, only a single thread starts on a device to run an implicit task region. Okay, let's go on a little bit. I hate looking at these words because they don't mean really anything to me. The only thing we design in OpenMP4, because again, we have to use pragmas, are these. Okay, to execute code on a target device, you have these two options, OMP target and OMP declare targets. To move variables to a target device, you have these three options. You can map them, you can use an actual construct called target data or target update. And then to accelerate this work, and this is very similar to the tile. Now I understand, thank you to your talk this morning. This is essentially what the NVIDIA people wanted to support this. You call them tile, what was it, tile?
Tiles.
Yeah, tiles.
Like blocks,
yeah. This is what these are, OMP teams and distribute, okay? I was so glad to hear it because I could see exact one-to-one correspondence here. And in fact, I would love to grab your book someday and then to translate every one of those into OpenMP, and I think I can do it almost fairly quickly. This is what the target construct looks like. It is ugly, I can't help that. That's the way the design is. OMP, but it is the same thing shows up for Fortran, as you can see. It looks exactly the same if you're reading this in Fortran. This is what the data, so the target directive is basically introduced to offload data and computation to the device. I'm going to show graphics to show you exactly what that means. It can have clauses to indicate what the target device is, what the data mapping attribute is, and some if condition to control the use of the offloading at runtime. Okay. You have a target data construct, okay, and the device data environment basically reflects the data mapping attributes that's been specified before, okay. And the reason for this is that you want to avoid repetitive creation and cancellation of the device data environment, because the target data directive defines a device data region. You can have multiple target regions that can share the same device data. I'm going to go into that. I'm sorry about these words because they do mean something. There's also another one that forces the update. So what does all this stuff mean? Let's take a look. Just to recap, target construct transfer the control flow. Target data creates a scope device data environment, and then target update requests specific updates. This is what it actually looks like. If you're on a host and you need to execute something over there, okay, you have all these options for moving things back and forth. Alloc just allocates the memory itself, but map, and you can use map alloc, but map to and from allows you to move it back and forth. To goes that way, from goes this way, and to from just means it goes back and forth. In C++M, I saw it, it's either const or there was a discard, okay? It's exactly identical in here, okay? Let's see, I have a better slide about that. So I'm not gonna skip this map clause. So here we go. So let's look at a little target construct. So this transfers control. So how does it do it? If you create some sort of target map here, okay, you're going to be able to transfer the control so that, it's still okay. This part is executed on the host, and this part that's in this block under parallel, because you've now created this target map construct, is now executed on the target here, okay? And then once you exit that brace block, you're now back in the host. I bet what you're doing is translating that into C++M. The next one. If you want to create the next one is moving the data around, okay? If you want to move the data around, then the target data construct does that for you. It creates a device data environment, okay, and then encloses the target regions, okay? The device data environment essentially is inherited by the device data environment of the enclosing target region. So it's all very structured block. So you have some variables out there that you want to move to the device. This is how you do it. In this particular case, it's N, okay? And you can see now, you can already see against the parallel, there's now an array notation in order to do this, and it's again an index notation. We like to adapt that to iterators if we can. And this just sort of shows it in a little more detail here about that exact code, okay? Just a moment to talk about copy or not to copy. One of the big problems with GPU and accelerated memory model is you have to figure out whether you want to enforce copy all the time or make it implicit. Almost everybody has gone with the model that if you don't need to copy, your language or your compiler will do it in such a way so that it's not enforced. No one wants to enforce extra copies if you never need it, okay? And it is possible. You just don't know at this time in our world whether GPU memory sits right on top of the host memory, or it might be discrete or different, okay? These days, it could have either one of these capabilities, and the language has to be flexible enough. And so far, what I've seen, they're all flexible enough to be able to, if the copy is not required, it just won't do it. OpenMPS's if clause, which says, if you as you parcel your work down smaller to a smaller and smaller amount, like, you know, if you're I don't know. If your last bit is only like only takes a few cycles, don't start up a full parallel region to do that. Okay, that's a typical thing to throttle finer and finer grains of parallelism. All right, what does declare target do? Well, this one says that I have created a function which I need two versions of, one for the host and one for the GPU. Okay, and this is what it looks like. It says that for this particular computation, some computation which I have created a declare target for, on the host, it's going to use this set of normal Intel x86 type functions. But on the device, it's going to translate that into its own specific language. The compiler takes care of that for you. Okay, you just write the codes to make that happen. I showed you the device data, the target data construct. This is a little bit of an adjustment to it. It's not too important to understand. Just know that in the previous case, the update of, see this init again? This target data, this init again that happens in between these two targets, it doesn't actually update the data in here. That is all done at the, that is done at the host level, okay? Right, so you see that do some other stuff is back to the host level. If you actually want that information transferred to the device level, then you would do this target update, which makes sense. It means I want to change some value at the host and update my device, okay? And you can see that is, in fact, what is happening here. In the middle, it switches back to the host, and then it goes to the target. Okay. Sorry, did I miss that?
You just jumped around so much I can't read any of it.
Oh, sorry. I'm blocking you, right?
No, it's just yeah. You're like an action movie director.
All right. So in here, in this case, the target here, the host here, it goes back to the host to update the device, the actual data, and then now all that gets transmitted back to the device. Okay. One of the key things that we figured out was that the part that makes GPU work well and it delivers the performance we're looking for is asynchronous offloading. It means that both the host and the target has to be working at the same time. OpenMP actually already has this task construct, which allows that to happen. And by enclosing, we just adapted it immediately. By enclosing the accelerator around around a task, okay, it now is executed asynchronously on the target, on the device, and then the host can continue forward with a different task. And at the bottom, you issue this so-called task wait directive in order to synchronize the two, okay? Let's go on to the team's construct. Now, this is something that works in a two-level hierarchy that is similar to what NVIDIA does, okay, and similar to what the tiles do, okay, because accelerators these days are often massively parallel architectures devices that support hundreds or even thousands of concurrent threads with a hierarchical organization, essentially the gang blocks that NVIDIA uses. So CUDA, for instance, provides a hierarchy of threads in blocks and grids. Okay? And OpenMP creates this teams and distribute concept to separate it out. And I want to explore this particular execution model. Okay? When you're on a team, you can create a league of thread teams, and there's various restrictions on that and what specific OpenMP constructs allowed or not, but let's look at what the picture does. Here's what the execution model is doing. Okay? If you issue a statement like this, what it says is that when a thread encounters a team construct, a league of thread teams are created. So here, we say the number of teams is 3. So you'll see that there's 3 teams created, and the number of threads within each team is 3. So there are 3 threads created within each team. Okay. They now control the structure block itself. Each team essentially has 1 master thread, and the team's region is executed only by the master thread of each team. Okay. The threads other than the master thread don't begin execution until the master thread encounters a parallel region. Okay. And once the teams are created, the number of teams essentially remain constant for the duration of the team's region. Now, in the talk this morning, there was a mention of Saxby, and this is essentially what I'm going to show you, is the Saxby example. And high-performance computing, Saxby, multiply, okay, and add, is essentially what this is all about, it's speeding that up. And it's a common thing that you would do as well, too. Okay, you'll notice that we've started a target data region, which transfers the controls to the device, as well as bring along whatever data that is requested in this case. This is an X of 0 to N. Okay? And you'll see that I have now created a specific target region inside that maps Y to from, which means Y is my output. Okay? And I've created a number of teams now with the number of blocks, with a certain number of blocks, and inside each block, a certain number of threads all doing the same thing, all doing that same amount of work. That's essentially what Saxby really is. Okay? The Saxby part is here, okay? There's a multiplication, okay? And an addition. So what does distribute give you? It accelerates it even further. This construct basically specifies that the iteration of some associated loop, which I'm gonna introduce the loop later on, is gonna be distributed across the master threads of all the teams. This really brings up the power of the computation, all right? This essentially is what we call a new kind of work sharing construct. And I'm going to skip this line because the diagram is going to give you much more information. And here it is. Okay. So now we have a team. And we have three teams, three threads. And you can see the original diagram. And now I've created an additional distribute clause on top of that, okay, from 0 to 9. So this distribute construct essentially specifies that the iteration of one or more loops is going to be executed by the thread teams in the context of that implicit task. The iterations are going to be distributed across the master threads of all the teams that execute the teams region to which the distribute region leads, to which that distribute regions might bind to. Okay? So if I were to add one more clause, and here's the loop, and you can now see the loop. Okay. In the loop itself, in here, because I have 0 to 9, that means that I'm going to share the work across those iterations. So I pick for this one, 0 to 2, for this one, 3, 4, 5, for this one, 6, 7, 8. For the next loop, which is the J loop, okay, I'm going to distribute that across all these guys in the same way, but they're going to cover each one of them exactly the same, six iterations here across the three threads. And this essentially is what it looks like. Now there's no work share, there's no barrier that happens at the distribute level, and the barrier only happens down here for the parallel level. And this is very similar to how tiling works, okay? This slide is just showing that you can combine them by creating these what's called combined constructs. And it's nothing major here. Go ahead. Yeah. Okay, the question is, what's the advantage of having teams? Okay. Specifically for an NVIDIA kind of architecture, this allows, it's kind of like their blocks concept. Okay. It creates this massive, remember these SMs, streaming multiprocessors? It allows all of them to work. And none of them to be idle. That's where that comes from. Okay. And most other GPUs, right now that concept is primarily restricted to NVIDIA. Most other GPUs still don't have that concept, and they might never actually have it. For instance, I don't think Intel's Mike or Xeon 5 goes into that kind of double hierarchy level. Okay, or yet, but they might change their product. I can't say to that. Okay. Multiple devices. This is coming next in the next iteration. Right now, even though you can have the same number, have multiple, have like 20 I'm going to use NVIDIA again, 670 GPUs in your machine, they're still the same devices. They're the same ISA, the same instructions. You really want to be able to address different device kinds, an NVIDIA chip, an NVIDIA GPU there, a mic, or Xeon Phi, okay, the different kinds. And you'll be able to do that where you can now have different targets executing asynchronously with your host. Okay? You may have heard of this other standard that is called OpenACC. It's a kind of an offshoot to OpenMP, developed primarily for NVIDIA devices. It is also mirroring a lot of the same directives. The beauty about OpenACC right now is that they have more implementations because NVIDIA and Cray has been leading the implementation in that area, although Cray is also working with OpenMP as well too. So they have been able to give us a lot of good feedback about what works and what doesn't. Okay, and you can see that a lot of these constructs are actually in both specifications. The red ones are the new ones that OpenACC has that we are going to bring over to OpenMP for the next particular iteration. Okay. There were some results that we had from Lawrence Livermore using these various different programming models. And you can see these vector sizes are beyond anything you've ever seen. Okay. The real test of a programming model is how well it scales. And here, this was presented in last year's research conference, where they show that different forms of these kinds of directives all do reasonably well, but many of them start having a problem as they reach, I don't know, what is that, 100 million size of vectors. Okay. I am happy to say OpenMP still does fairly well, but this is a problem we're going to have to address, okay? To figure out what is going on at that level. We did that with a simple multiplication, matrix multiplication of y equals a times x, and we did it again with the Jacobi simulation as well too, okay? And they're all showing the kind of problem at 1024 by 1024 as the scaling starts getting worse and worse, okay? In reality, this is what people are trying to do at these kinds of national labs. This is the kind of things that they're multiplying. Probably not something that you're going to be doing. So somebody was asking today, what is the limit on size of these things, right? This is what we've been able to push it up to. So I had shown this slide about where other compilers are. Well, Clang is also, so GCC has implemented this already. And Intel has this in the 13.1 compiler. Sun Oracle just brought this stuff out. Clang is the next target that I'm trying to push to. So over the last couple of months, I've been trying to push upstream a lot of OpenMP stuff into Clang. Okay. And right now for 3.5, which just got released, we have initial support for the AST and the semantic analysis for OpenMP 3.1, an older specific that doesn't have any accelerators in it. And then in 3.6 for February, we're aiming for full OpenMP 3.1 implementations as well as accelerators, just because so many people are asking for this. Okay. And then by 3.7, this is all kind of future plans. We are certainly hoping that OpenMP 4.0 will be fully by this time next year. Okay. Hopefully next conference I'll be able to come back and say that's all done. I don't know if that's going to be the case. This is all pie in the sky to some extent, right? This is a release notes I just upstreamed to Clang 3.5. Okay, saying what it is that we were able to get to. A lot of people's effort in order to get something like this going. Okay, as you can see, a lot of companies are interested in getting this going because they all have important business reasons for pushing this forward. There's a chart about the current upstream to 3.5, the Clang 3.5 progress, as well as a benchmark. And a link to the OpenMP. Yeah, I know it was a little bit unfair in that Phronix thing, but we kind of straightened them out. And then there's a document that describes this offload infrastructure in Clang LLVM. Okay, I'm not going to get to this document, but it's there. It was designed by, a large number of people across the industry that talks essentially about creating a multiple target FAT binary that encapsulates code, for instance, for the Xeon Phi or other GPUs, and then put that into a libtarget.so, which then links to particular runtime library for the different your specific GPU, and so that it can be executed on the Phi, on the Phi or the GPU. I don't know whether it's called Phi or Phi. Okay. Thank you, Pablo. It means wisdom, either way. All right. Okay, so what else is interesting? Where are we going with all this stuff? Well, we got all this now in 4.0. We're now pushing forward to the next phase, which is going to add things like FPGA support for accelerator. Just like other GPU accelerator language, they're all beginning to push the envelope a little more now. We've kind of got our feet wet. We can now stand on our feet. Maybe now let's try to running a little bit. Okay. So FPGA is another target. Multiple device types is for us a target to do. Other things we're going to try to add to OpenMP, like transactional memory, consumer-style parallelism, async, more tasking model, C++11 memory model. And then finally, the last thing I want to talk to you about is that we have a research conference called IWAMP, which where I'm going next after this talk, which is in Brazil. It's not always in Brazil. It moves around. Okay. And the next one's going to be in Germany. After that, we're going to be at supercomputing. This is where we live, too. We live in the supercomputing world. And then after that, we're starting a conference similar to this called OpenMPCon, which is going to be paired with IWAMP in 2015 in Germany. Okay. And we're also doing the same thing. We're soliciting proposals and talks for that particular conference. Okay. And that just sort of shows you what IWAMP looks like sometimes. So just to recap, it's a common vendor specification on a parallel programming model on multiple compilers. It's a de facto standard. It's not a standard like ISO, but it's a standard across three different general purpose language. Okay? Our aim is to have delivered high-level accelerator language support and SIMD support. And then finally, multiple devices and letting the local compilers generate the best code that they can. Okay, that's it. That's my talk. Any questions at this point? Go ahead.
So in OpenMP 4, I noticed that you were explicitly specifying the number of teams, the number of threads. That seems like a tough thing to optimize in general, especially if you don't know exactly what hardware you're going to run on. Is there a way to have the system choose that for you?
Right. So the question is, if you have to specify the exact number, is there a better way? It's going to be tough if you don't know what hardware you're going to be running on. And is it not better to have the system specifically choose the best number for you? Is that sort of it's a fair question. And I get asked that a lot. So OpenMP's design is more about having a certain amount of tuning and knobs. And certainly, the people who are at these natural labs want these kinds of ability to tune and go specifically. The ability to select the right number of threads for you is going to be, so there's a query that allows you to ask, what is my device on the system? Okay, and based on that, we could provide something that allows you to do what you just described. In practice, though, if you're doing compilation that is on one platform running it on a different platform, that is not going to really work out all that great, right? Because your local GPU is not going to be the one that you're actually going to be running on. So in a way, this is one of the concerns about that kind of setup. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. You're first. Yeah.
Sorry. So there's no support for querying the device at runtime?
There is.
There
yes.
is?
Yes. Yeah.
So can I query it? Seems to me like there are some, if you want to start dynamically setting your team sizes, for instance, mm-hmm. there are these kind of fundamental things you want to know about, like, how much memory do I have?
Yeah.
How many threads do I have per block? What's my warp size?
Yeah.
Can I actually query for all of those? Because some of these abstractions support that and some of them don't.
Right. Let me just quickly just go back to see what are the runtime capabilities are. Let's see. Okay. So what do we have? Get the number of devices, number of teams, get the team numbers. Okay, so that's the runtime queries that allows you to set those. Okay, questions?
It was quite clear when you use OpenMP, and now that OpenMP is not being used on for shared memory,
yeah.
it's somehow in the future I can see overlapping OpenMP
Yes.
To GPU accelerators.
Yes.
But I can see clearly this move in the future to a different node in clusters. Because in the end, we're just moving bits from one device to another and asking to execute things.
Yeah.
So do you see this happening? So,
the question is
one overlapping and one standard overlapping another.
So the question is, as we move forward, are we going to be taking OpenMP up to the next level rather than going down to the lower level, which is now clusters and through networks, through interconnects, which is where MPI lives? Nothing is off the table with this change in statement. However, OpenMP has always worked well with MPI, that I highly doubt that that's going to cross over. MPI and people have routinely always programmed in these national labs, MPIs for cross nodes, across networks and clusters, and then within a particular node, OpenMP. So right now, within a particular node, you have all these things, GPUs, accelerators, coprocs, HTM, for instance. That's where OpenMP lives. I think even MPI is doing something about that. I was talking to another MPI guy, and he mentioned that there's a possibility that they might be exploring, so something like that. There's no question that there's going to be a convergence in terms of all these different standards. Where am I taking with this stuff? And that's probably one fair question. I work in C++ as well, standard committee. I try to bring all of this stuff to C++ as well. I think it's great that OpenMP leads this stuff and explore where this stuff works, as well as other languages like C++AMP, OpenCL, which is a great friend of OpenMP. And then we try to gather all this experience and eventually deliver a much better design for C++ for the C++ standard. None of this is ready for a full standardization yet. That is a question that people are asking me. In fact, I asked Herb, you know, if he planned to take C++AMP, and he says it's not ready yet. It needs more user experience. And I totally agree. I see exactly the same thing here. A lot of this stuff we're still exploring to see whether it's, okay, it might be ready for a TS. Okay, so maybe that's the way to go. All right. Any other questions? One more question there. Yeah. Yeah.
But how does this scale in the opposite direction towards mobile?
Consumers and mobile?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the question is, I've talked a lot, and it looks like that this stuff seems to be designed for supercomputers, but it's not. The reason, the choice of design we made in some of the slides I've shown is that it also works for digital small devices. And in fact, Texas Instruments is one of the lead for this. And they specifically are designing stuff for embedded chips, telecommunications, automobiles, small devices, handheld devices. So the idea is that you can't, like I said, I talked about the drones where they have very small package coprocs, and they also need to be programmed as well too. And they might not be running C++, or they might be just running C or whatever, right?
Where does the bottlenecks come in at that point? You've got to move a lot of data in a time
for
application, like
real-time
audio or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Like real-time audio.
Yeah, when does it become useful? Obviously, that latency.
The question is, where's the bottleneck when you're moving lots of audio or video data to some sort of coproc, which is totally an and unfortunately, I don't know if I can answer that, because now we're getting into much more specifics of what one of my team members do, Texas Instrument, and they might be able to answer that question better than I can if I try to pretend to answer it. Anyone else? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
No problem.
Write a program and try to use OpenMP. Yep. I use those pragmas, and at runtime, the system will determine if some of the code can be uploaded to the other device.
Yeah.
Right. So, and obviously, if device doesn't support such an operation, it will be executed on CPU. So, as a programmer, how do I know what algorithm should be or have a good chance to be uploaded to the other device?
Okay. So the question is, so this is about heuristics to some extent. What is a good algorithm for offloading to a device? Oh, by the way, there's cards out there. If you haven't picked it up, pick up all the free language reference cards. What is a good algorithm that goes to?
Or another way,
how do I know?
How do I make an educated guess if the algorithm that I write will get offloaded or not?
So people now all have a certain knowledge about what works well on CPUs and what algorithms don't work well on CPUs. As I said before, if you're doing a Monte Carlo simulation where you're accessing memory all over the place, that is just not going to work well on a GPU, where you really want consolidated memory regions all executed in parallel. It's sort of a vector. This is why a proposal like this is very, very friendly towards vector SIMD. Because what's going on a GPU really is just another form of vector SIMD capability. And if you have things that are accessing in that way, we talk about video, that is perfect there. Well, you're constantly going through sequences in order. Okay, audio, another good example. Compression, another good. We're just stepping through and applying it to a whole block at a time. Okay, applying some operation like transform. I heard transform today to a whole block. It absolutely is. Yes. Yeah. Right. So this is where it's really GPU dependent. Okay. Even within the same GPU, different versions will have different data sizes that is appropriate that can blow out the cache. In the past, we used to use direct memory access to poke things right into memory. Okay. Now we have this capability. So again, I can't answer that. This is where you begin to have to really read your documentation. We're not at that point where we can say there's an optimum data size that you can transfer from one to the other. Let me talk to you after the thing, and then we can sort of, yeah. I think I'm done, right? Okay, I'm running out of time? minutes ago. Okay, thank you very much, guys. Thank you for having me. Some great GPU talks, by the way, and I wanted to say it's great having you guys, okay?